Welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Kay Momquist and Chip Haley. Sponsored by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Hello and welcome to another edition of Meet the People of MCB. So glad to have you with us today. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Kay Momquist.
I tell you, Kay, I'm looking forward to today's interview. I've done a number of different things with this individual that we're going to be interviewing today, and I'm just so glad that she's graciously consented to be our guest here today on Meet the People of MCB.
I agree. And, you know, it's really a pleasure doing these interviews. And every time there's something new, there's something different. And so I always look forward to these. And so this one is going to be a good one as well.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today we have as our guest Debbie Sanders from Carthage, Missouri. She is just so full of resources. She's just a very delightful person. I've known her now probably a couple of years, and I'm always impressed with what she has to say, what she has to share. So, Debbie, welcome to Meet the People of MCB.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on here. I have enjoyed these podcasts ever since you started them with Denny back in, what was it, the COVID year, 2020? So, well, it's, yeah. You know, it's done. Mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed them.
You bet. You bet. Well, Debbie, what we like to do, first of all, is to start off talking about a person's vision loss. So why don't you share with us what was the cause or result of your vision loss?
Well, I have glaucoma, and it wasn't a misdiagnosis, but it was a missed diagnosis, I would say. Because back in about, I think it was probably about 2002, 2003, somewhere in there, I was going to my regular eye doctor at the time. And let me preface this by saying that I have worn glasses since I was in first grade.
Okay.
And then I ended up getting contacts and when I was in junior high. So it was one of those things. I went to the doctor regularly every year, sometimes twice a year, et cetera. So that was one of those things that even, you know, transitioning from where you have your parental care and they make sure you go to the doctors to those weird years in college age where it's like, I'm young enough, I don't need to ever go to a doctor. You know, regardless of all of that, I still regularly went to the eye doctor. So in 2002, I was going to my regular eye doctor and they had pegged me as a glaucoma suspect. And so they put me on that list, but nothing was ever done. And then I was working at Langston University at the time. And this is fast forward to about 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. And I would notice that people would walk by my desk, they'd stand at my desk, and depending on where they were standing, I would not know that they were there unless they made a noise or, you know, cleared their throat. Excuse me. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I also noticed in my left eye, I wear my hairstyle is I have bangs, and it was almost as if I had a strand of hair that was constantly hanging down in my left eye. And I'm always sitting there, you know, flipping my bangs, trying to get them out of my eyesight, you know, and yet they weren't there. You know, they weren't
Yeah,
hanging
yeah,
after my
yeah,
eye.
yeah.
So anyway, I went to my yearly exam and I said, you know, it's kind of weird because I have people coming up to my desk and I didn't even know that they were there. You know, and I explained the situation. I told them about always there's like something on my left eye that I'm always just like trying to swoop away. And I said, and I'll also backtrack a little bit. We had My late husband and I, we had lived in Arizona for a short period of time. And part of their driver's license thing is you had to do a visual field. Because they have so many seniors and stuff out there, they want to make sure if they're giving driver's licenses out to 70-year-olds that they can actually see to drive, kind of a thing. So anyway, I had a bit, it's a very minor visual field test that they give. But I had had that done back in the 2004 period. And then, so I had asked my eye doctor then, I said, do you think maybe we should run a visual field or something just to see, make sure something weird's not going on? And so he said, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, so we ran that and he came back in after reviewing the results and he was just kind of dumbfounded and he was like, I am really sorry to have to tell you this, but you have significant vision loss. And I'm like, what? What are you telling me? What? You know, and he didn't say I was blind or going blind. He just said you have significant vision loss. And I think my pressures were still kind of maybe borderline, but without a shadow of a doubt, I left that eye doctor's appointment with the diagnosis that yeah you've got glaucoma and you have your vision you have vision loss. And so we took the step of I said, well, what do we need to do to prevent this, you know? And then I went through all the questions. Is it going to come back? What can we do? Is there surgery or whatever? And that's like, no, you know, glaucoma is the silent stealer of sight. You don't know necessarily that it's done damage until it's gone. And so that was all very shocking for me. And I was very angry and very upset because, you know, since except for about a 6 month period, this doctor had been my doctor since 2002, had been seeing me for many years. And it's like, why didn't you catch this since I was already flagged as a glaucoma suspect? And so, you know, it's like if I was already at that level, why didn't you put me on drops or something just to be more preventative to watch this, you know, instead of it progressing to the fact that, you know, I already had 40% vision loss, you know. So anyway, that's why I say was kind of a missed diagnosis. And then I was so angry and upset after that. Once he got me into a glaucoma specialist, I went and found another eye doctor. And that was Dr. Cockrell. And he has taken such great care of me ever since. He's been very aggressive in working with his treatment plan as well as working with my glaucoma specialist. And then fast forward to like today, you know, I've had like 9 or 10 surgeries. Yes, I only have like 5% vision loss. I mean, 5% vision left. It still has progressed, but we've still, you know, it's been 10 years now since I was diagnosed. But instead of my vision loss happening in 2 or 3 years, you know, it's now 10 years later, you know. So that's kind of my story with my vision loss journey.
Okay. So do you consider yourself high partial, low partial, totally blind?
I am legally blind, and I will say, gosh, maybe medium partial now because
Okay.
with my left eye I can it's progressed into my central vision now, and so I can recognize a little bit of movement in my left eye, but it's pretty much useless now.
Okay.
And my right eye is still pretty decent. I think the last time we did percentages I was about 5 to 8% left on it in my central vision. So,
Okay. Before I turn it over to Kay, Share with, I know Toby, your husband, Molly, but why don't you share with our listeners about your family? You got other brothers and sisters or your immediate family? Why don't you share with us about your family?
Okay. Well, I am now the lone survivor of my immediate family. Over the last couple of years, I lost my mother and both of my brothers. And this is kind of what has brought me back to Carthage, where I was born and raised, is that with the passing of my family, I have inherited our family farm. And so we have been over the last 3 years in the process of moving to and relocating back to my family farm. I had been married to, went to college, got married while I was in college, and went to work full time. And then my first husband and I, we went out to the West Coast for many years. We were in children's ministry together. And unfortunately, he passed away when he was 40 years old of a massive heart attack. And I have a son. We had a son. His name is Stephen. And then a couple of years later, I met another widower who his wife had passed away, and they had three daughters. And so we met online at a Christian web dating service. And, you know, we were commiserating and sharing our grief journey and all of that kind of stuff. So it just, you know, God just kind of put us together. It was really neat the way all of that worked. And so now I had went from a having an only child to having four children now. So I have Molly is the oldest, and we have Becky, and then Stephen, my son, and then Amelia's the youngest. So.
Okay. Yeah. I know, like I mentioned, of course, I've met Toby, your husband. I met Molly and I met Becky. So, yeah, you have a really a great family. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate Toby. Toby is one of my SSPs, and he does so well with what he does, especially when it comes to audio type of things. So we got to get this guy involved in doing some of those kind of things for MCB. Right now, I think I'll pass it over to Kay. Kay, I know you've been anxiously awaiting to ask your questions.
He just loved putting me on the spot just suddenly. It's like, hey, I hope you have a question. Yes, actually I do. So that's really neat that you grew into a family. My daughter has the same situation. Her boyfriend currently has three kids and she has two. So now between the two of them, there's five, seven people in the family. So yeah, nothing like inheriting people. So well, that's really neat. So can you tell us more about your work history or what you've done, you know, so far in your life, if it's going to college or anything like that? What all have you
Sure.
done?
Well, like I mentioned, I met my first husband at college, and I went to Bible college because I was a musician at the time, and so I did a lot of singing and with groups, and we traveled and toured around, and then, you know, I got married. I went ahead and got. I actually say I got 3 degrees from the first college I went to. I got my associate's degree in ministry with music emphasis. And then I got my MRS degree, Mrs. degree, because I got married. And then I got my PhD degree, which stands for putting hubby through, because I went to work full time to pay the bills so he could finish college. So I always say I got 3 degrees that first college that I went to. And so then throughout the years, I just usually worked part time so that I can be could be involved with all of my husband's ministry projects and everything that he was doing with children's ministry. And I did led music. I was a music minister for a interim music minister for a while at one of our churches while we were in between pastors. And I've been a creative arts director at a church, as well as ministry assistant, just working in the office administratively. So I did a lot of that over the years. When I did not work in churches, I've done anything from graphic design, working at Kinko's. I worked at a Christian publishing house that produced Sunday school materials, and I was an admin there as well as graphic designer. What else have I done in those 4 years? So that's kind of the stuff I did. And then as my husband's his health started failing, I could kind of see the writing on the walls, like I need to finish my degree. So because if something happens to him, I need to be able to really support the family. And so I went back and had a goal to finish my bachelor's by the time I was 40. And I finished it at like 39 and 11 months. I was just weeks away from my 40th birthday when I finished my bachelor's degree. And I did that in management. And also, while I was in that program, I did it all online and as an adult learner. And I just fell in love with distance education, online learning. And I thought, you know what? I think this may be what I want to go into, going into academia. And then my husband got sicker, and then he just passed away, all of a sudden with a massive heart attack. And after that, I had already completed my bachelor's degree at that time. We had moved back to Oklahoma. I take that back. Well, we had moved back to Oklahoma for a bit, close to his family, and then he at that time felt like he was called to do one more stint in a church. He said, "I'm not done with children's ministry. I know I have more to offer, more people to train up and to be fired up and excited about getting involved with kids ministry." So we had moved to Highlands Ranch, Colorado, or Littleton, Colorado, it's also known as. And we were out there for just 8 months when he passed away. But yeah, it was crazy. And when we were in Oklahoma, that's when I started working at Langston University. And while I was there, I was working with training faculty and staff on technology, software technology. I helped manage a computer lab there, for the faculty and staff. And that's right when at least the Oklahoma schools were just starting to get into distance education as far as computer and online web-based versus just over your local TV PBS station thing. And so I was right in the beginning stages of that for our university and getting involved with that. And so that prompted me to continuing my education, and I went and got my master's degree in educational technology from the University of Missouri. Again, it was all online. And then I went for my educational specialist degree, which is basically the equivalent of taking all your coursework for the most part for your doctorate degree, but not going in toward that dissertation phase. And so I got my ed specialist from University of Missouri. And then, my husband passed, and I'm sitting here. I came back to Oklahoma because my boss had offered me hit my old position back. So I was doing that. And then while I was doing that, Oklahoma State had a NASA grant that needed an instructional designer. So I ended up working for NASA through Oklahoma State. And then I went through and started a PhD program with Kansas State University for online teaching and learning. And then my blindness stuff hit, and it's like I'm two classes shy from completing all the coursework for the doctoral program in order to be a doctoral candidate. And it's like my world was just flipped upside down once again. And it's like, I can't do this. I can't try to concentrate on academic reading whenever everything's so blurred and I'm missing lines and I'm missing letters and I just can't do it. So I walked away from that. It's like, well, that's one goal I am not going to complete, I guess. So anyway, but through all of that, it's opened so many doors with other things, and especially even as hard as it has been dealing with going blind, especially at the apex of my career path, kind of a thing. It brought me back to where I wanted to work and serve people, and just my heart for ministering to others and helping others. Like I said, serving people. And so through this, I ended up forming my own nonprofit organization, the MLV Foundation. And so that's kind of where I am right now with all the educational career path stuff. And it led me to what I do now. So.
So, I seem to recall I was in Oklahoma, around the time. I'm pretty sure you. It seems to me you guys lived in Oklahoma City or around that area. I could be wrong about that,
Well, we
but
lived an hour away.
yeah, okay. Well, I had a farm around that time, and I knew people like do you remember Dale Lamar and people like that? And so I had heard of you. And I guess just listening to what you had to say as far as all your degrees and everything else like that, and the things that you've done in your life, you have not been bored. Definitely say that. Nobody can accuse you of just sitting around doing nothing. So that's absolutely fascinating. And it's great to see that you're still involved with people, even, I mean, I can't imagine living somewhere for 8 months, basically, you haven't even gotten to know the people or anything else like that, and then having that happen. Wow. All I can say is, my heart goes out to you, but I'm glad that you seem to be that outgoing person that you are. And so that leads me to my next question is, I think in Oklahoma and various other places, you've been involved with the local affiliates and things like that there, but what got you involved with MCV?
Well, it was mainly because I have been involved, highly involved with Oklahoma Council for the Blind since the beginning of my journey. And once I knew that I was moving back home, back here to the farm, it's like, okay, well, I need to start getting involved with MCV now. And I had heard of Chip's name for several years, and I don't remember how I came about hearing about Chip. I think it was I had tuned in to something about the national organization at the time with ACB, and I had heard Chip's name, and he was from Joplin, Missouri. And I'm like, okay, my ears just perk up anytime I hear about anything in our small corner of the world over here, And so it's like, Joplin, wow. And so that gave me it gave me some things to research, and I was looking for how many blind people were living in Joplin, Missouri, Jasper County, blah blah blah. So I was in there on the National Data Center stuff and doing research and pulling numbers, and it's like I was kind of impressed that Joplin actually had a nice little blind community. And I had seen Chip's name come up two or three times, but on various things. And I thought, okay, well, this is kind of going to be kind of nice, because I'm going to have a tribe of peoples that I can, relate with once I get moved up to Carthage and stuff. So it's like, well, this is good, because I was kind of thinking that, well, there's not going to be any blind people around this area, and I'm going to have to getting, be traveling to Kansas City or Springfield or wherever, to try to find a group to get involved with. And I did not realize that Missouri had so many affiliates, because Oklahoma, there's only, well, there were five at the time, and now I think we're down to three. So there's not, unless you live in Oklahoma City or Lawton or Tulsa, you don't have any place to get involved with the Oklahoma Council of the Blind kind of a thing. So I was so glad to see that Missouri has multiple affiliates and there's some place to get plugged in. So there's no excuse. There's some place to, that you can get plugged in, you know. So
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, when I was living in Oklahoma, that was the problem. I lived halfway between Tulsa and Stillwater on a farm. And you know, running into the affiliate meetings and things like that was just about impossible. They really wanted me to get involved. I wanted to, but there you go with the transportation. Of course, way back then you didn't have Zoom and stuff like that. So, yeah. Well, that's really great. I love hearing these different stories about how people came to be, and so then I assume you just got involved with the Joplin area affiliates, and that's how you got involved with MCB.
Kind of, yeah. The Joplin affiliate, they have weekly lunches, and you know, once I kind of was here on a regular basis, I'd be here like for 2 weeks out of the month on that first transition couple of years back in 2020, and plus it was 2020, so everything was shut down. But once everything started coming, once I started meeting again, I was going over there, you know, once or twice a month, for sure, usually once a month, up until I'd say about these until spring of this year. And my schedule has just been so busy that I just have not really been able to get over there, even though I know they can come pick me up, which they did in those early years. And I was so appreciative of just having that option. And they are so blessed to be able to have the volunteers that they do that are willing to drive those vans to the outskirts of the counties to pick blind people up, to bring them to lunch so that they can have some socialization with other people. I mean, that's near and dear to my heart that's even an option for people. Because you know, usually, especially Kay, if you have that rural Oklahoma, you know, there's nothing. So there's no Uber, there's no Lyft, there's, you know, you have regional transportation, but it's going to cost an arm and a leg to go anywhere. And usually you can only do it and use it for a doctor's appointment or something, you know. So, you know, just with the Joplin Association, just to have that option was just wonderful. And like I said, you know, just being able to go and have lunch and meet some people and socialize, that's just a great encouragement to anybody who's feeling isolated and alone. And Joplin's very fortunate to be able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. In my case, I was really blessed because I had a sighted spouse. But the other part of that equation was we actually had a working farm. So nobody was bored there either because it was a full-time job. And so, you know, but you're right. I mean, if you live out in rural anywhere as a blind person and you don't have means of transportation, you really have problems. There's no doubt. So, Chip, do you have any other questions?
I certainly do. Debbie, as you
Oh,
mentioned, yeah. Debbie,
no.
as you mentioned, I've known you now for a couple of years, and you and I have worked together on the Technology Association of Visually Impaired Missourians, which is a terrific organization. And I can't explain or express enough what an asset you are as a part of all that. And then also, you were just recently elected secretary last month at the annual meeting of ATI during our MCB state convention. So I do congratulate you on being elected secretary of
Thank
ATI. And I say that also because I've wanted to get you involved with MCB on a state level because you come to the organization with just a wealth, really, truly a wealth of experience and knowledge. Just listening to you during our tavern meetings, I just thought, wow, we got to get this lady involved with MCB. So I can't tell you how tickled pink I am that you're really starting to get more involved with MCB. But what I'd like for you to do, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but what I'd like for you to do, because I don't want us to get away from your telling us a little bit about your foundation, MLV Foundation, and as well as you're involved with Mocha. So if you would like to share about those two things, I think it would really be great.
Okay. Well, let me first start off about and share a little bit about the MOCA Conference for the Blind, which stands for Missouri, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas. And I will say I have such a heart for the four state area for since growing up in the southwest corner. And our school systems, our extracurricular activities, at that time we were used to playing and being involved with competing against schools in all four states in our little area here, our little pocket. And so I have always had such a heart for the four state area. And I saw a real need for just a plain old consumer-based, consumer-driven conference for people who need resources and who are looking for help and looking for some training and encouragement, socialization, meeting other blind people in the area, building networking connections and stuff. We have professional conferences for people who work in the blindness field. And we have our membership-based conferences like the MCB State Convention, the national affiliate. But we did not have just a plain old consumer-driven based conference. And seeing that need, I decided to just put on my own conference. So we've got this is a huge need now. There's in the four state area, there's almost 500,000 blind and visually impaired people. And yet, I don't have the percentages in front of my head right or in my head right now about how many people of that are actually involved in either one of the membership-based organizations. And it's a small percentage, when you consider the overall picture of almost 500,000 people. So it's like people are looking for help. They're needing help. They're needing the encouragement. So I decided back in 2018 to start planning this conference. The first one was supposed to happen in 2020, but COVID happened. And then we thought, well, should we do 2021? Just bump it back a year. But then all the Delta outbreak and the other variants came out. It's like, okay, we'll just push it back to 2022. And then the very beginning of 2022, we were like, is it going to be a go or is it a no-go? But we finally just bit the bullet and we said, we're going to go for it no matter what. So we had our first MOCA Conference for the Blind in Bentonville, Arkansas. This last August, August 4th through 6th, and it was really, really good. And it's the MOCA conference is set to take place every other year. So 2024, Missouri will be hosting the next MOCA conference, and then the 2026 one and 2028 will be in Oklahoma and Kansas. So that's the MOCA conference. MLV Foundation, I started it back in 2015 because I was struggling so much trying to find that encouragement and those resources to help me know how to navigate the blindness journey. I needed some success stories besides Helen Keller. I needed real life now type of scenarios of hearing people who were succeeding in life being blind. So, and I was really struggling finding help. And I'm like, if I'm struggling finding help, I know others are, because I think I'm kind of a pretty resourceful person, can research things pretty well. And I thought it shouldn't be this hard for me to come up with resources. So anyway, I thought, okay, this is not working well. Something's missing. So I decided to start my own nonprofit. And with that, I was given a vision and could visualize and picture building a community for the blind, a residential community for the blind. And and imagined it at that time, even on my family property. And things happened, kept happening. And it, like, we were looking for property in the Oklahoma City area, Edmond, Guthrie, Stillwater, and stuff. Doors kept closing on things. And then, and unfortunately, my family ended up passing. And here I have the family property. So I have big goals, big ideas, big visions for what I plan to do. But to back up a little bit, the mission for MLV is to connect the blind and visually impaired by enhancing lives, encouraging independence, and expanding awareness. And we do a lot of social type of events, recreational events, because like I mentioned, it's about connecting, building those connections. And it's so important to have somebody that has some familiarity with the blindness journey. And when you can connect with somebody on that level and say, how do you manage? How do you do life? And it's just so important, I think, for us as human beings to build connections and stuff like that. So that's part of the my limitless vision. I have all these ideas and this vision for things for us. And so that's how I came about with the MLV Foundation. So that's kind of where we are with that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Debbie. I really appreciate it. I have participated in some of the activities. As you mentioned, the MoCA conference that was held past August down in Bentonville. I had gone down there and I was so impressed with the work that you did in putting all that together. And one of the exciting things that you had asked me to join in on a panel. And we got to meet with some of the Walmart executives to talk about making Walmart stores accessible to the blind community. And it was really exciting how open they were listening to all of us and the kind of things that we had to share. And one of the other things, I haven't been able to participate in it as much as I'd like, but you're talking about socialization. You also do a monthly kind of a thing using Zoom where you've got folks that come together and you do have different games that you all do. And yeah, and you can tell people are loving to do that. They really. So why don't you just very briefly share that part of what you've got going on?
Well, we actually do it every Tuesday night. We call it Tuesday Night Live, and we do it on Zoom. And it actually started out as a when OCB had their 2021 state conference, and they did it on Zoom, of course, like everybody else did. And it was just a way to try to help train in some ways some of the members on how to get comfortable using the Zoom platform and make it fun at the same time. So I created the game night and we were doing trivia and we were, learning how to use mute and unmute and raise your hand and all this kind of stuff. So that's kind of the reason how it got started. And it's just kept evolving since that time. But we play every Tuesday night at 7:30 and we play anything from trivia to Jeopardy to the game we played last night was called Spontaneous. And it has to do with music. We've done Name That Tune. We've got one called Educated Guess. So we do all sorts of different things. And on occasion, Jay Doudna, who is very involved with Oklahoma Council for the Blind, or of the blind, excuse me, and has been involved with the Pennsylvania Council as well before he moved to Oklahoma. He has a DJ type background, radio background, and he has so much vinyl and CDs in his home. It's unbelievable, this man's knowledge. And so usually, once a month or once every couple of months, I'll have a Jay's Musical Musings, and he will put together some songs, and he has a bunch of trivial background that he will share about some of these songs and the artists and the songwriters. And it is so neat to hear and be a, and listen to his knowledge on some of these, some of the music and stuff that he shares with us. And so it gives me a little bit of a break from planning all the games, and just to sit back and help and then just listen to someone who's so knowledgeable. And I just love it. So anyway, we have a lot of fun Tuesday nights, 7:30. Hit me up if you want a link to that, and we'd love to have you all join us.
Oh, that would be really great. Before I pass it over to Kay once again, I think folks will probably recall Jay on the national level because I remember going to ACB national conferences and conventions where Jay was a mic runner, and he always did a terrific job doing that. So we appreciated, his involvement with ACB on the national level. So, Kay, you've got a question. I know that you're just wanting to ask.
Well, I guess so. My usual question, I ask it every week, and so the listeners are familiar with this question. So, Debbie, what is there about Debbie that maybe some of your closest friends and things might know about, but is there something about Debbie that nobody knows that they might find interesting that you have done, or hobbies or anything else like that that people may find really fascinating?
Well, I think, and I mentioned it briefly, I think what most people find very fascinating is the fact that, yes, I worked on a NASA project. And I think that that's pretty cool beans, to be able to go through my life and say, yeah, I worked at NASA. I didn't work at one of their centers, but I did. I've got all sorts of NASA things, space related things, and that I picked up at, for working with them on that grant for a couple of years. But I think that's pretty special, and not very many people get to experience something like that. And I feel very blessed to have been to have experienced it, and to been there at that point in my life, to say that that's pretty cool, and not very many people know about that. So that's my little thing.
That's neat. I know what you mean. It's really nice to be able to look back and say, wow, I did that. And it's not conceit. It's just pride in the fact that you were able to do that, and not many people can say that they've done that. And I can understand why you'd be very proud of that. So, Chip, I know you've got more things to ask, so.
Well, I got one last question. So, Debbie, in closing, one of the things that we would love to hear from you, if you have any words of encouragement or words of wisdom that you would like to share with our listeners, we would love to hear what you would have to say.
Oh boy, words of wisdom for me, huh? Well, I would say I really would like to just encourage everybody to know that if you're struggling with your vision loss, if you've been newly diagnosed, this especially goes out to you. I just want to encourage you all and say that, let you know that there is life after blindness. Your life is not ending. You'll find new ways to adapt. You'll find new ways to do things. But your life is not over. It's just a new journey. It's a new fork in the road, and it's good. You can find the silver lining in what you're dealing with. And the most important thing I would say is find another blind person to connect with and find someone to kind of mentor you through this. And like I said, there is life after blindness.
You
I
know,
couldn't
Debbie,
agree with you more.
oh, you bet. Yeah. And, you know, Debbie, we want to thank you once again for being our special guest here today on Meet the People of MCB.
My
And,
pleasure.
you know, I appreciate the things that you've shared. And, you know, one of the most important things that you've shared with us today, and Kay mentioned it earlier, is that you did not let your blindness prevent you from, you know, getting involved in all the things that you, I mean, all of the things you are one very busy lady with all the things that you're doing. And so, and all the accomplishments that you've been able to accomplish despite your blindness. So we got to really commend you on everything you've been able to do in your journey. So we really appreciate you being our special guest today. And
Well, thank
ladies,
you for having me. Yeah.
oh, you bet. You bet. It's really been our pleasure. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you know somebody that you would like for Kay and I to interview here on Meet the People of MCB, you can have them contact me, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or you can contact me, Kay Malmquist, at 608-436-2610.
You never know, you might hear yourself next time right here on Meet the People of MCB. Enjoy your week, everyone, and we'll catch you right back here next time. Bye-bye.